Play the lottery with Jackpocket. What's Jackpocket? Jackpocket is the lottery app that lets you play New Jersey lottery games right on your phone. People have won over $5 million playing the lottery on Jackpocket. Download Jackpocket and get a free Mega Millions ticket using promo code CASH. Jackpocket. Play the New Jersey lottery on your phone. Must be 18 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Please visit jackpocket.com/TOS for full terms of service.
Welcome to the Creative Person Podcast. We are in February. It's our month dedicated to the storytelling of love and erotism. And today, words can really manifest to all of you out there listening how profoundly blessed we feel and how big of an act of love it is. The mythical novelist, satirist, poetess, and quintessential feminist icon Erica Jong agreed to be our special guest for the creative interview of the month. So welcome to the Creative Person Podcast, Erica Jong.
Welcome.
We're very happy to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for hosting us in your enchanting apartment. As a writer myself and a huge fan, to me it feels so magical that this is actually the second time around that we speak, and I get the chance to do it, breathing in the air of the place where you probably sit every day writing and take inspiration from. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to explore with you what role love and erotism play in your narratives, poetical aesthetic, and emotional intellectual journey as a writer who so fearlessly broke so many taboos that were imprisoning the expression of women from the 70s to our Time's Up times. Mm-hmm. Starting, of course, from the groundbreaking masterpiece, Fear of Flying, that at least for the women of my mom's generation was sort of like prohibited book.
Yeah.
So I would like to start our journey from that, from Fear of Flying. How did the idea of the book come about? And also, I revisited recently for our interview. Its words felt so vividly contemporary.
You know, people ask me, how did the book come about? And I don't really know. I know that I was keeping notes, notebooks, all the time throughout my 20s. But I had no idea how it would turn into a novel. And then I went to this conference of psychoanalysts. At that time, I was married to a psychoanalyst. And the conference was so funny and so crazy that I thought, this is the frame for the book. But the book has to go back in time, forward in time. It can't just be in one time. It's a book about my whole life up to the age of 28. And looking at it, I think I found a way to tell this story, but I never thought I would.
Was that a reflection on yourself as a woman at that moment in time, or were inspired by different traits of an ideal woman?
Both, I would say. Because I was noticing that books were missing the interior life of a woman. You know, that was a period when all the novels were about mad housewives. This 60s, 70s,
right.
Yes.
Women dissatisfied with their lives, but not knowing where to go. And I came to hate these mad housewife novels because at the end of every novel, the woman leaves her husband or has a baby and stays with him. They all seemed so similar
right.
to me.
Right.
And I wanted to talk about the interior life of a woman, but to do it in a different way.
Yeah. So, as a woman, I'm really curious to ask you, have you considered yourself a feminist, or was that a label that was attached to you? And how different it is to be a feminist in the Me Too world of today? What's your take on that?
I have been a feminist my whole life. My mother was a feminist. My grandmother was a feminist. I don't think there was ever a time in my life when I thought that women were completely free to be themselves. Yeah. And it was always a motivation for me to write books about women in which they were sexual and intellectual both.
Yes.
Because most books about women, either the woman is completely consumed with sexuality or she has no sexuality and she's just an intellectual broad, you know. And I thought, that isn't true. Yes. We are both.
I agree, and I like a lot your answer, because I come from a family of very strong women that through generations and during the war and then during the 60s and now, I mean, have tried to be themselves through all the difficulties that life brings to the table and the differences of all these years. So I'm really happy to hear that. That wasn't just a label, but it's a real representation of yourself.
Absolutely. My mother was a painter. She was always aware of being a woman painter, mm-hmm. that she was never recognized, though in art school she was the best painter, and yet she couldn't get the Prix de Rome or whatever was the highest honor. And they told her that she wouldn't get it, even though she was the best, because she was a woman and she would waste her talent by having babies. So I was brought up with my mother's story. I was very aware that I had to break through. I've always been a feminist. I didn't have to read Simone de Beauvoir to become a feminist. I always was.
But like, for example, my mom needed to read you to support her feminist's ideas.
That's great.
Yeah, because the first time that I ever heard about you and your books was actually with my mom, who read your book when she was in her 30s. I was a kid, and she was moving from rural Sicily to the big city, Milan. And she was taught to be, of course, this very old-fashioned housewife for her husband, mm-hmm. and just dedicate her entire life to her kid, which she did. But she was always a very strong, outspoken, like a tiger mom. Mm-hmm. And she instilled in me the concept that of a freedom of a woman, even though she was aware of her mm-hmm. limits of that time. So when I remember this, because she liked to read, not that much, I would say, but when she really liked a book, she was there with the book in her private moments. So I was there in the house watching her reading your book. And I was like, Erica Jong, Fear of Flying, what a cool book. And she was intensely reading it. Right. And for my mom, uh-huh. was like, okay, so now I can be a new woman because I'm in this big city, so I don't need to be, you know, secluded in those schemes right. that are from the small village. And by the time that she was there, probably she went also to bookstores that were not the thing right. in the village. And she ended up finding you.
Where were they from in Sicily?
From a small town close to Ragusa, which is like at the very yeah. tip of the island. So, of course, now things have changed a lot through the years. But mm-hmm. that's our education was strictly Christian. So it was very mm. difficult for her to embody her, you know, her female energy.
Right.
But then now she really embodies it.
It's great yeah. to have a strong mother.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so also we were reading that writer and playwright Theresa Riebeck, I guess in the foreword of the 40th anniversary of Fear of Flying, stated something very interesting, that she said that before Hannah from Girls, Anastasia Steele from 50 Shades of Grey, and Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw, there was Isadora Wing, the outspoken protagonist of Jung's revolutionary book. And I will say also, even before The Handmaid's Tale became that much, mm-hmm. much of like a phenomenon these days. So my question to you would be like, what did you have a perception of the impact that the book would have made on women by the time that you were publishing it?
I think you can never imagine that lightning will strike. Mm-hmm. with a book. Sometimes the book intersects with the time and suddenly it becomes a phenomenon. You really can't control that. And you'd be a terrible egotist to imagine it would happen to your book, because it happens very rarely.
Right.
So I had no idea. I mean, I remember my American publisher saying, we'll publish 5,000 copies and we'll probably have to eat them. And then my paperback publisher, which at that time had a woman in charge, she said, I will not buy the book unless you agree to print 35,000 copies, because this book is the story of my life and the story of every woman's life.
Yes.
And I will not buy the rights unless you promise you will publish so and so many copies. So she really enforced it. If the book had not come out at a time when there were women in charge of publishing houses, the whole thing would have been different. I mean, the book now has come out in Arabic and Mandarin and all these languages. But in the beginning, nobody knew what it would do.
Right. So now it sounds brand new to them, this material,
these
new countries that has been recently published, right, and translated.
Well, Egypt. I mean, I had a journalist from Egypt who came here and was raving about the book.
Right.
And those are countries where the role of women is still kind of complicated, and they're not allowed to do many things and to express themselves freely.
Or to drive.
Exactly. Right.
But that's beginning to change. And, you know, the Egyptian journalist Mona El-Tawi wrote a very influential book called The Middle East Needs a Sexual Revolution. Basically, she says, we have to have a sexual revolution. Who knows how soon it will come. But allowing women to have sexual desire has been a problem throughout history.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just wrote an introduction to a book about female sexual desire. And in it I said, there is no society where female sexual desire has been free. It's always been an issue throughout history. Why is that? I think because it's so strong, stronger than men's sexuality, I think.
Yeah.
And people want to control it, contain it.
Of course.
It's true,
There have always been periods where women's sexuality is alive and then inevitably goes backward.
Yeah.
And we see that with feminism again and again.
And to connect with that, I would like also to talk about the zipless fuck and clear the air about how that was perceived and what you actually intended in the book. How much is a woman really free to express her sexuality? And we started talking about that with the previous question. And how much is she allowed to express also her romantic side? So in your opinion, is the male sexual and loving energy and the female sexual and loving energy distinctive regardless of the gender? Can a woman be driven by a strong male energy and vice versa? What do you think about that?
I think certainly a woman can be driven by a strong, but I wouldn't call it male.
Mm-hmm.
I would call it energy.
Yeah.
And it takes different forms.
Yes.
There's no doubt in my mind that sexual energy is related to creativity. And as long as women were held down sexually, they were also not allowed to express their creativity.
Yes.
So the two are connected.
I agree with that. And you made a very strong point also for our project.
Right, Creative Bazaar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because our
show.
Yes. Our show is about creativity and sharing, you know, different perspectives and different point of view to show how actually, you know, the creative energy is something that the world really needs nowadays. It's like we are stuck in our society.
Right.
People don't really, in my opinion, understand the power and the potential of our creativity. And so I'm really glad that you said that and about the connection between the sexual energy and the creative potential, because I believe too that they are very well connected. And during history, when women were kind of in a weaker position, and also their creative side was kind of kept hidden.
Right. And people didn't want to recognize
it.
It's fear, basically.
Right. It is fear, basically, which is the focus of my next question, would have been the focus of my next question, because we're talking about creativity and how you, and also sexuality, so how you kind of like face and find the courage to expose yourself physically, emotionally, and also with your creative outlet. So we think there was like a thought that we had that there's one thing at stage fright also in real life. I mean, when you need to be under the spotlight of your own life or of your own fear and confronted it. And so my question is, how did you confront the themes of fear and change in your writing? Because we covered fear of flying, but then you had a long journey of exploring these themes.
When I'm writing, I always tell myself no one will ever read it. And that it's just for me. And when I have to send the book out to my agent or my publisher, I feel terrified, mm-hmm. always. There's a moment where I just don't want to do it. So I experience that with every book.
And how did you, like, when you press click and send?
I force myself.
You force yourself.
I force myself. And I'm always sure nobody will like it. And with the sexuality and fear of flying in other books, I didn't expect the reaction. Because I think sexuality is normal.
Right.
I didn't expect this huge
attention of that.
Mm-hmm. because of it. And every time it's like new, right?
Yeah.
Love and death are stages of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we all experience them somehow. And in Fear of Dying, your character experiences the death of her parents, and she's losing her husband too.
Mm-hmm.
Something similar actually happened to me too in 2016 when I lost my father and my 10-year relationship ended.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt completely lost and I didn't know what to do. I realized though that change can be scary.
Mm-hmm.
I've been lucky and there I understood how strongly I wanted to be in New York. But what advice would you give to those women who, in situation of change and dramatic events, think that they are not strong enough to face it and maybe they feel abandoned by role figures that once gave sense to their everyday life?
Life is change. And, you know, as all the Buddhists say,
mm-hmm.
we try to keep it still, but we can't keep it still.
Yes.
It's always changing. Nothing is permanent. We have to accept that. And it's hard to accept. I've just been reading this book by Pema Chodron, the Buddhist nun, who says, my yoga teacher introduced me to her. At the end of every session, she'd read, and I'd say, who is this Pema Chodron? Never heard of her. And I've been reading this book, How to Deal with Uncomfortable Things, something like that. And she says, we fight against change, but change is the nature of life. We're never going to be able to stop change. If we think we can, we're deluding ourselves.
Change means somehow, you know, to go through something that you don't know, and that probably makes it scary. But yes, life is change, and it evolves.
Absolutely. Even when you think things are settled, they're never settled.
It's true.
Right.
It's
never. True. And we have to learn this lesson. It's amazing.
I think it's also the beauty of life, even because even when you go through tough time, and all of us, you know, went will go through tough times because it's like how life is. But you learn a lot about yourself. You know, you evolve as a human being.
Right.
So I think this is a wonderful advice to people who might feel lost because mm-hmm. of change and because of maybe too many changes at the same time and don't know how to go through them.
You're absolutely right, Daniela. I would hope that my books give women courage. That's my deepest wish, and men.
I keep on talking about change.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that the imagery of the woman has changed recently, and how it is portrayed in the pop culture today? I'm thinking about the phenomenon of The Handmaid's Tale, and specifically the TV show, because of course the book, like...
What?
The Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood.
Yeah.
And also like a movie like Bombshell, I feel like there is... somehow these stories are become very, very dark, and the exploitation of violence and sexual abuse is very predominant in these stories, which of course, like, I think it's a part of the reality that women and men but face every day. But do you think that this imagery is sort of like pushed to his to its limits and it's too much? Or what is your...
Well, you know, Margaret Atwood wrote The Handmaid's Tale maybe 40 years ago. It was... I remember going to the first movie that was made of it, because she was somebody I knew, and we were both poets together, and then we wrote first novels. Where does the book start? It starts with the fear that human beings will not be able to reproduce because the planet is dying. Which we're very aware of now. And they have to find a way to make babies. That was really the starting point for the book. And we're still dealing with that. You know, people are afraid of having children in a world where the planet and the animals and the plants are dying. So she saw very early what was going on. And the first movie came ages ago. But it was only the TV series that made the book so widely known. Mm. So there's a great fear that our planet is dying and our ability to reproduce is dying.
We're talking about TV or movies, because I remember last time we talked, you told me that there was something in development for you, with probably with Julie Taymor. Was that a TV project that you were working on? And is there any TV projects or movies that you're working on?
We're working on a project based on Fanny Hackabout Jones, my 18th century novel.
Right. Now I would like to move to a fun and a little bit sad topic, that is dating, and how actually dating has changed today because of the dating apps. I grew up with no smartphones and a time where you could have, you know, met real people in real life with no avatars. Mm-hmm. Now, after a long relationship that ended a few years ago, as I was telling you earlier, I got back to the dating scene to find out that it's completely different.
Right.
Yeah. And so at the beginning, I decided to download the apps as a sort of sociological experiment.
What app?
Well, Tinder and Hinge in particular.
Right.
And
Tinder
and Bumble.
And
Hinge.
Hinge.
Yeah. Right. And Bumble. Those were the three.
I've never done that.
But
every time I got divorced, dating rituals were different.
True. And that was
so... You had to get used to a whole new world every time.
And I have actually deleted them because I used them for 2 years because I was more curious to see if technology somehow changed, you know, the way people were interacting and was able to connect human beings more than real life.
Right.
But I met interesting people with none of them actually... That was the click. However, I have now decided to go back to real world and see what life brings to the table. But I would like to...
I can't imagine. I mean, going to Tinder and swiping through faces. And profiles. I was with a friend of mine one day, and she said, I have to find someone to fuck. And she said, let's look at these pictures. And we went through all these pictures. And I don't know what happened, because she was at my house in the country for the weekend.
Okay.
So I don't know. But it's pretty horrifying to me.
You know, it's like you don't know who you are interacting with.
Right. And people lie.
Yeah.
They lie about their age. They lie about their experience, their pictures, everything. It doesn't seem like a great idea to me. But I know a lot of people who met that way.
Yeah.
Dating, you have a point here too, because dating changes at any time.
Every time I've been single, it's been different.
Yes.
Right. Should write like fear of dating.
Right, exactly.
If you want, can we write it together?
I wanted to touch base a little bit because we are from Italy, of course, and you have a great relationship with Italy, with Italian literature. Actually, you are the recipient of the Fernanda Pivano Award. And yes. I wanted to ask you about that. And also, I know that you have a very interesting story on when you met Umberto Eco. So I would have liked for you to tell us about your relationship with Italian authors.
Well, Nanda was lovely to me. She took care of me like mm-hmm. a mommy, almost. And one time when I was going on the Maurizio Costanza show, does it still exist? Yes, it does. She was worried. She thought Maurizio was a sexist. And she said, I'm not letting Erica go without me on the show. So she came with me to defend me.
Oh, that's...
She was very tender
and
sweet. And every time I was in Italy, I would visit her. Umberto I met here at the Italian Institute.
Yes.
Italian Culture Institute.
Mm-hmm. And I was asked to introduce him when his Name of the Rose came out.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I read the book and I talked about him. And we were supposed to have a dialogue.
Yeah.
But Umberto practically would not let me talk. he just talked over me.
Right.
I've met him a few times. Including, I've met Stefano, his son.
Yes.
Mm.
I met Stefano a few times, and I found him so nice. Umberto, he was sort of an old-fashioned
Italian. Yes.
Why do I love Italy? I will tell you, I've thought a lot about it. It is the one country in the world where you have permission to be human.
Oh, thank you.
This is very interesting.
You have permission to make mistakes, to laugh at yourself, to fail and recover. And what I think I like so much about the Italian character, not that everybody has it, but it's like you're allowed to be a human being.
This is wonderful.
I love this.
Not necessarily to always be perfect. Americans are so obsessed with success. We're so afraid of failure.
Yeah.
And I think in Italy there's a kind of humor.
Yes, there is.
About people. Not that Italians are not neurotic. They can be very neurotic.
No, but I understand what you're
saying.
But
the mm-hmm. idea that you're just a human being, you're going to make mistakes. Not everything is perfect. That's very deep in the Italian character. I love that.
Yeah. If you think we're a big country of comedians.
Yeah.
Also, if you think of the big movies that were also successful, if you think of La Vita Bella, Life is Beautiful, and Benigni.
Right.
They're kind of like the Pinocchio, the Peter Pan that's inside of the heart of an Italian. I think that's...
You know, when I think... In my Italian language course, we had to read Carlo Collodi,
of course.
Yes.
Pinocchio. And it's really a book about failure,
success. Fear of being different.
Yeah. And it's so profound, really. Mm-hmm. And really, what is Pinocchio's problem? I want to be a human being. I don't want to be a puppet. This is very typical of Italians. Let me be a human being. Being able to laugh at yourself.
Yeah. That's important also to go through the changes that we were talking
about.
Yes.
And how can you go through life if you can't laugh at yourself?
That's true.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
You know, you're lost without that. Yeah. I feel very much in Italy. I was there last winter filming this documentary.
And in Venice area?
Yeah, in Venice. And we go to the ghetto. And a woman recognizes me and she says, Erica Chong!
That's very Italian, a good interpretation of an Italian screaming.
Tutti romanzi. Okay. So, you are wonderful. I love you. It's very open.
Yeah.
And we started to speak, and she said, I'm a gondolier. I may be the only woman gondolier in Venice. She said, but I don't want to be a woman gondolier. I want to be a gondolier.
That's amazing.
This conversation is so typical.
Yeah.
I want to be a gondolier. I don't want to be a woman gondolier. I will not forget it.
Yeah.
You know, it was so sweet.
I'm really happy that you have such a great relationship with the city, as you were saying. And this story about the woman gondolier who wants to be called just a gondolier. It's great. I love it. And I think it makes that relationship even stronger. So, and being someone who comes from that area, I'm so happy you shared it with us. And I also would like us to move forward with the topic of creativity, because as we were sharing earlier, Creative Poison, our show and our project, has the goal to explore creativity and imagination through storytelling and to give back to people these powerful tools. What relationship do you have with your imagination?
Well, I'm a big dreamer. I continue to write poetry.
Yes.
Because it keeps me in touch with the unconscious.
Mm. Yes.
I feel very proud that my latest book, Il mondo è cominciato con sì,
yes.
Mm. is published in Italian. So I wrote a poem. It was always yes, si, da, ya, the sibilant sound of ascent, the slippery tongue in the mouth, the lover, the da dawning, the ya yelling, the si, sugary and sweet.
I love this book because it's also with the two languages.
Yeah.
It's bilingual, so English and Italian. So thank you so much.
Yes. Translated by Bianca Pizzorno, who is a wonderful...
Who's a wonderful poet, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And this is a wonderful gift.
Yes.
It's so nice that I got them to do a two-language edition.
Yeah.
You know, if you read poems aloud to yourself, they're much more easy to understand.
Yeah.
I've always felt the voice gives life to poetry.
Yeah.
Beautiful. There was something that we wanted to actually ask you, because we wanted to ask you about your creative process and what inspires you to write, but I think that you kind of already answered that. And then, because we know that you do also public speaking, and then you are a poetess, and then you read your poems out loud for an audience. So how do you use your voice, and how your contents change when you deliver it through your voice? What do you think that happens?
I've become very comfortable speaking in public. Sometimes I get up on stage with no notes at all and just talk.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a long time to get there. Occasionally, I will do that in Italy, but I feel like my Italian is not literary enough. I love the Italian language.
Thank you.
First of all, it's a language for poetry and opera because there are so many rhymes.
Yeah.
It's the best language for opera, without a doubt. My very favorite opera is Don Giovanni.
Oh, yes.
And I remember some of my books, I've put Don Giovanni on the computer and listened to it while writing.
Okay.
I'd like to know from you what you think about podcasting.
People go around with their little headsets, and they're experiencing you through your voice. So I think it's a very interesting medium.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
So we are coming towards the end of our episode. I want to say thank you for the kindness and the generosity with how you shared your story and your point of view, because that was heartwarming for me, and I think for everybody listening to us. So what's next for you? Do you have any, and we know that there's this beautiful new project, the book,
Il mondo è cominciato con un sì,
the word began with a yes.
Yeah.
And is there anything else that you're writing?
I've just written a kind of autobiography called Selfie.
Wow.
Genius.
I want
it. We love it.
I want this.
This is a genius title.
Is it?
Yes.
I was so not sure. It's like a self-portrait.
So
we want to take a selfie.
Yes. Put together. As we come to the end of this episode, together, for all of you who are listening, if you have any questions, comments, if this conversation inspired you, we invite you to share your thoughts on our website, www.creativepoison.com, spelled creative P-O-I-S-N, or on our social media Facebook page at creativepoison, P-O-I-S-O-N, and Instagram account at creativepois_on. And please follow Erica Jung on and off stage, and stay tuned for our next episode next week. And one last thing to say.
One, two, three.
Ready, set, imagine.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Play the lottery with Jackpocket. What's Jackpocket? Jackpocket is the lottery app that lets you play New Jersey lottery games right on your phone. People have won over $5 million playing the lottery on Jackpocket. Download Jackpocket and get a free Mega Millions ticket using promo code CASH. Jackpocket. Play the New Jersey lottery on your phone. Must be 18 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Please visit jackpocket.com/TOS for full terms of service. Play the lottery with Jackpocket. What's Jackpocket? Jackpocket is the lottery app that lets you play New Jersey lottery games right on your phone. People have won over $5 million playing the lottery on Jackpocket. Download Jackpocket and get a free Mega Millions ticket using promo code CASH. Jackpocket. Play the New Jersey lottery on your phone. Must be 18 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Please visit jackpocket.com/TOS for full terms of service.